I'd like to remind all participants this conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone on today's Who Is Working Group call on Monday the 19th of December. We have Wilson Abidaba, Anne Nastiger, Michael Young, Steve Metzalis, Suzanne Prozer, Stefan Van, I don't have the surname on, I'm terribly sorry about that. And from staff we have Barry Cobb, Liz Gaster and myself, Gisela Gruber. Apologies noted this evening from Don Blumenthal. If I could also please just remind you to state your names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Barry.
Great. Thank you, Gisela. Michael, it's really over to you. If you want to chat through the agenda and then we get to the agenda items, I'll go through those.
Sure. Great. Thanks, Barry. Just real quick, first thing up off the agenda, Barry, I'd sent you back an email saying that we should explicitly probably – oh, you have it there under 4A now. Okay. So, Wilson, you have made some progress and sent around an email with a couple of examples of survey tools. So we'll add that. The other thing is add a little bit of time. Hopefully I'm hoping that a new volunteer will show up on the call today because I just talked with them today, so they're going to try and clear their time, and we'll need a few minutes for them to introduce themselves. And the first-time contributor to ICANN, so they'll have to, you know, verbally express their interest and then file a statement of interest, I guess, would be the process.
And I am here. Hello, Michael.
Hi, Stephen. You know, given in all transparency and fairness, maybe, Barry, it would be appropriate to have the team be introduced to Stephen. And we were looking for more volunteers. Unfortunately, Stephen was able to give us some time. So, but he should explain his background and his interests and everything to the group before we probably proceed.
Certainly. Shall I do that now?
Barry, with that, am I following an adequate procedure here? Is that all right?
Yes, that's perfect.
Okay. Go ahead, Stephen.
Okay, I'll be brief, so I'll give you a 30-second introduction. My name is Stephen Van Egmond. My background is in computer science from the University of Waterloo. I'm active in web and internet infrastructure development, and my current activities these days are mobile applications, and I have a strong interest in Who Is.
Just so how everyone knows, I came to think to ask Stephen to help with us. I'd done some work with him in the past. He's done some infrastructure work in and around registry systems in the past with Afilias, actually. And that's how I came across Stephen originally. And when I talked to him about the Who Is work, you know, he's very interested in it. I had mentioned that I've been working with a few people on kind of implementation examples of kind of a next generation Who Is, and Stephen is one of the people that that I've had a lot of conversations with and done some work with on this. So, and the wonderful thing about Stephen's volunteer time is that he's not tied to the new GTLD application process, so that that busy activity there is not going to pull his time away from this, per se.
All correct. Thanks, Michael.
Hello, all. This is Paul Brigner. I just joined.
Okay. So does anyone have any questions for Stephen about his background or interest or so forth? I was thinking, and I'll throw this out to the group, because this all just came up in conversation today, but a good place maybe to have Stephen contribute because of his technical experience and background has helped to reinforce Group 1. One of the things that we kind of lost in Warner was Warner's also very experienced technically, and there are other people that obviously understand Who Is in that group, and I don't want to diminish that, but Stephen can bring a technologist point of view as well, a strong technologist point of view to helping draft or craft those questions, which I thought might be useful. So if nobody objects to that, I'm going to move that we put him in Group 1. Okay, hearing nothing. I guess we'll go ahead.
And Michael, we also have another new member. Pardon me if I mispronounce your name, Brigner.
That's correct. Thank you.
And
hi, Paul.
Hello.
Don helped recruit him. And so, Paul, basically when we have new members join the call, in addition to the actual statement of interest that you submit to the team, if you can just kind of quickly introduce yourself and some of your background to the rest of us on the phone.
Certainly. So I work for the Motion Picture Association of America. I am the Chief Technology Policy Officer here. I support our legislative efforts, and I also run our technology office. I am a liaison to the chief technology officers at our six members, the major motion picture studios. I have a background in technology. Prior to working at MPAA, I was at Verizon for about 10 years. The first part of that was writing internet software and some of the ordering systems that they had there. And then the later part was working on technology policy. And before that, my career was also in technology, working with mostly internet software development. I am now an attorney, an MBA, and hopefully I have a good mix of a background that I'll be able to contribute to the group. I look forward to it.
Paul, thank you very much for joining us. We, in the beginning of this working group, we had a whole slew of interest, and then unfortunately people's time got largely constrained when the GTLD process kicked off in June.
Sure.
So we really appreciate you jumping in and helping us move the cause forward.
Thank you.
So does anyone have any questions or comments for Paul on his background? Interest? Hearing none. Welcome again, Paul. And I think Don had it in mind to have you help him with his group, did he not?
We didn't have a chance to talk about that, but that sounds great for me. I've got a lot to learn about what all is going on here, so I'll just be happy with that assignment.
Okay, so just to reiterate, Don's group was actually had the task of subgroup had the task of going out and checking back in with the stakeholders that helped contribute to the original report, WHOIS functionality report that the staff did, and then also we've thought of some additional stakeholders that we'd like to check in with and make sure that they've read that report and see if there's anything else they feel is really pertinent in WHOIS functionality that we should make sure gets into the survey.
Okay, very good.
So a great first-time piece of work because it'll get you introduced to a whole bunch of people in the ICANN space.
Exactly. Thank you. Sounds good.
Okay. So does anyone, going back to agenda bashing, now that we've got our two new people sorted on the call, is there anything anyone wants to add to the agenda? No? Okay. So, Barry, I guess we should probably review how we did on the last meeting's actions as the next step. Isn't that, that's what's next on the agenda here. I'm trying to write the very small type to the right.
Yes, thank you, Michael. This is Barry for the call. We've got seven action items that were carried over from the last meeting. I'll step through these quickly. A couple of them we'll talk about in line, and then the two major ones are actually formal items on the agenda. Starting with action number one, we were to complete our second draft of the RAP, who has access recommendation back to the council. We did submit out the second version to that, and we'll review that as our next action item. So I'll go ahead and move on to the second one. The second one is Michael and I were to meet with Rafiq and debrief him on the sub-team one kickoff. We had some logistics issues, and we weren't able to get that in by the tail end of last week. And given Rafiq's time zone, we couldn't meet prior to the call. However, we do hope to meet after the call, but unfortunately Rafiq's not on connected right now, so there must be some communication issues. At any rate, if we can't meet with him after the call, we'll definitely try to get with him later this week. third act.
Barry, it's Michael. I just want to step in there for a second. Is this time, it's still 5 in the morning right now for Rafiq, is this time going to be workable if we need him on calls regularly?
I would think that it would be very difficult if I were in his shoes, but I can't speak for Rafiq, and I'm not sure what his schedule is like. So hopefully, that'll be one of the items that we should bring up with him when we do connect.
Okay, Liz, we have some new members, so what we might want to do is just take stock of, do a new doodle to see if not knowing where people physically are, if we're unfairly making it uncomfortable for anyone else, and if time should be adjusted for others as well.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me there's just kind of a psychological break at 6 in the morning. So even if it was possible to shift this call an hour forward, it might provide quite a bit of relief for Rafiq. But we also have to consider whether or not that's making anyone else's burden a whole lot tougher. So, okay. So can we run a doodle then? That'd be great.
Yes, I'll take that down as an action item. And it also... dovetails into action item number 7 about our 2012 draft meeting schedule, which I did send out to the team. The only response we got is that there would be the same time as we're currently scheduled to meet now, and since we're doodling, maybe those two will come together. Okay, if I can move along on the third action item, this was for everybody, and that was just to review the SAC 051 WHOIS taxonomy and its use and incorporation into the survey. So hopefully everybody had a chance to review that and memorize the new taxonomy, and we'll just start using it from this point forward. But definitely we need to ensure that where possible that we integrate. Fourth action item was for each of the sub-team chairs. Didn't receive any feedback on the review of this outside of what we would like to try to discuss today in the call, and this was just to determine a resource pool against the assigned demands of each of the sub-teams. And when we go through the sub-team reviews, action item number 4, if those sub-chairs can review what they've uncovered. And now we've got a couple of more volunteers, maybe that will be minimized some.
Barry, I actually have a quick update to give the group on number 3, the SAC 51.
Please go ahead, Liz.
Okay, thanks. So you may recall that the board in Dakar, and Susan Prosser, I think, sent this around to everyone, which was very helpful. Among other things, it requested that staff put together a roadmap in consultation with the community to look at implementing the recommendations in SAC 51, but it also directed the staff to distribute the report itself to all of the SOs and ACs and solicit comments and views from the different SOs and ACs. And on the GNSO Council last meeting, which was last Thursday, it did approve a short update that Stefan Van Gelder, the chair of the GNSO, sent then to the board, updating the board on the work of this group as well, and what the planned outcomes of the group, the work of this group are, as well as the IRD working group, so that the board would be informed about these other pending activities that, you know, it views as relevant to development of that roadmap. So I just wanted you to know that this group, the work of this group and the, you know, planned deliverables were highlighted in a memo that the GNSO Council sent to the board in response to its request for input. There's no nothing more really than an update on the purposes. There's no assessment or qualitative information, but I'm happy to send that update around to the group. It's on the council archives.
Well, it's glad to know. I guess I'm glad to know, Liz, that the effort that we're trying to put together here has got some attention and interest by the community, particularly both the council and the board. So that's great.
Exactly. Me too.
So, Barry, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. Thank you, Liz. And while you're up, we already talked about action item 4, and so action item 5 was to assess ICANN staff resource availability for the survey. And Liz, would you like to go ahead and provide just a quick update for us?
Yeah, I wanted to provide a little more than a quick update by this call, so let me start by apologizing for that. But for those of you who are just joining the calls, let me just back up and tell you that the plan has been for this, we have this team, this working group divided into three subgroups, and the notion was for the first subgroup to really focus on drafting questions for the survey, the second group really focused on the delivery mechanism for the survey, third group really focused on outreach, and with regard to the drafting of the questions for the survey, that process has really been painful and stalled. We've had some changes in participation, and we just haven't made the kind of progress I think that everyone was hoping to make, and so the issue came up on the last call about whether staff could perhaps put a draft of the questions together for the group and or a consultant, doing it through staff, or and would there be funding for that kind of support for the group, and would that be more efficient or effective than having the subgroup try to put together the first set of questions, and then it was understood that that first group and then collectively the whole group would review those questions, edit as you like, add, subtract, et cetera, but just kind of pursuing the initial threshold question of whether we could put together a list of those questions. And then we also had some discussion about how complex or what I would say, with what precision should that survey take? Should we be, because I think I voiced at that time, I was happy to look into it and try to give the group some feedback on whether there would be staff resource available to do that, when we'd be able to do it. But as an initial matter, expressed a little concern about what we're biting off in terms of trying to express complex issues in a understandable way to a broad group, and some of the expertise that might be required. I'm certainly sympathetic to, I think, how hard it is to perhaps develop a survey by committee, and I think that was maybe one of the challenges that the group had just starting off, is just recognizing that drafting a survey by committee is not so easy. And when we think about sort of, some of you are really very technical and sophisticated in your expertise in this area, a well-designed survey, is sort of carefully worded, and is that the best approach anyway? And Wendy had suggested maybe we need kind of a lightweight survey that just really throws it out there. Shorter questions that are simple and that follow perhaps the format of the report. So all of this was for me to take back and see, what resources we could provide when. And we kind of ended with this, so we didn't have a chance to discuss it much as a group beyond just the agreement that I'd go off and try to assess this. Is that like a fair status of where we left things, Michael and...
That's the way I remember it.
Others that were on the call? Okay, so basically I'm assuming that's a yes, and I'll tell you, I have a couple of thoughts about it. I apologize for not having a more clearly formulated response, which I don't. But where I think I'm concerned is in three ways. One, definitely I think drafting a survey by committee is hard, and some of the recent work I've done with WHOIS surveys, I sympathize with why we haven't really kicked this off the ground very well. I do see that we have some new people who are actually quite skilled in this area, and maybe we should reconsider and see if you want to take a crack at it, but I think that was a very reasonable challenge that the group is encountering. And then I think it really is particularly difficult to express, when I started to think about some of these nuanced technical functions that we're talking about and how to write questions, like just taking the international. We've come a long way since the time when that WHOIS service requirements report was prepared, and in many of the areas, like, for example, the IRD work on internationalization. And would a survey on internationalization as an illustration, want to ask recipients of the survey about the different models that you've been discussing, what the benefits and drawbacks of some of those models might be. So if that's the case, if we wanted to, same thing with the taxonomy report and some of the other work that's been done, some of the, for example, the comments on internationalization that are in the Who Is Review Team report, if we wanted to layer on, I think, some more nuance to some of the questions, I think it's a more technical kind of survey than what I would call a general consumer-focused survey. And if that's the case, then it changes a bit, I think, the task that was originally assigned to the working group and made me wonder, at least, whether it was most prudent at this juncture to receive input from a broad audience to gauge support for the various technical requirements, which I think is what we were initially kind of tasked with, or does at this stage in our discussions about Who Is still need to be more technically focused with a goal toward defining potential technical requirements with more precision. And that is something that I thought is worthy. I'd like to have put that in writing for you, but I thought is worthy of more discussion with the group, because I started to feel like, in my own experience with this topic, that eliciting broader policy views and opinions on the phraseology of a report that was written 2 years ago. I mean, I would concede, for those of you who are quite familiar with the language in the report, that where it's talked about levels of support, you know, we should just discount those and say that anything that was worthy of being in the report had some level of support associated with it because it had been discussed in previous policy debates, and focus, not try to gauge, use that as a gauge for broad community support, but rather try to refine some of the functionality that would be needed because of the roadmap, for example, that the board is asking for, and some of the inputs that might be better, more useful to the IETF at this stage and to a more of a technical audience. And that brings the question up about, is the audience a broader audience, or are we missing an opportunity to take advantage of maybe, if nothing else, take advantage of some of the progression that's occurred in our discussion of protocol issues to use this in a different way. And so the short answer to the question I was given last week is I still need to get back to you with, you know, how we would support this, but part of how my question about how we would support it really would be helpful to have further direction from you on, is this the right way to proceed? Am I?
Yeah. Liz, it's Michael. Why don't I just jump in here and say, you know what, it seems like this is going to be really complicated, and we should just forge ahead on our own. I think, you know, I've been thinking about what Wendy said last meeting, and just, you know, I really want to get some momentum going here, and I think we have enough volunteers on the call that, you know, as part of the new business, I was going to suggest something, a structure just to kick off and get going with some draft questions. So, you know, why don't we, you know, hold our breaths and get through the rest of the action items, and I'm happy to step up and throw that idea out to the group and see if we can't get moving, if the group's up for it.
This is Ann Nostiger. I have one thought as I'm listening to this discussion, and that is, would it be appropriate for us to relook at our groupings at this point, since we really have not really started in on this drafting of the questions on the part of the first group. When I volunteered for the first group, I think it was also very fluid as to how this was going to be working, what was going to be involved. And, you know, I will freely admit that my expertise, my stronghold here, is not going to be on the technical side of things. So with the benefit of more information, since we first delegated people into groups, perhaps I'm a better fit in the outreach department, and maybe there's someone in the outreach group that's a better fit in the first group. Just a thought.
That's a very good point. It's Michael speaking, and I think that's a very good point. Part of what I was going to suggest was a bit of restructuring and maybe swapping around of responsibilities. So, and that's absolutely in keeping with what you just said.
Okay, great.
Okay. Barry, we want to finish the action items, and then I think maybe we should just jump into that topic, go back to it, and see if we can't get some momentum going with it.
All right. Very good. Thank you, Michael. This is Barry. So action item number 6 is from the survey tool subteam, and Wilson will be providing us a more formal update with respect to their findings. The action item itself was to maybe look at tool requirements for estimating cost and funding requests. If some of these free tools don't meet our needs, if after his review we think that those free tools will suffice, then this action item will be closed. Else, then maybe we'll look at some other paid options. But again, this is a formal action item number 4 that we'll review through. Last action item was, again, to produce the 2012 draft meeting schedule, which I sent out a couple of weeks ago. The only thing I'll just mention on it is right now we still have our March 1st deadline to have the first draft of the survey due to the council. And so if we do meet with this schedule, that is 5 meetings away. So time is drawing near. So with that, Mike, I'll turn that back over to you.
Okay. Barry, one thing maybe you could try and do while I'm introducing this is, do you have the inventory of WHOIS service requirements report handy?
Yes, give me a second and I'll upload it.
Can you open it up to, once while I go talk this through with the group, can you get that open to the short list near the end where it lists the requirements R1 through R11? And I will talk in the meantime while you're doing that. So what I was going to suggest is, our initial structure, I think, in theory worked well is before people's resource time got distributed, especially some of the more technical people that were helping us in this group, by work that's happening around the new GTLD process. So, as you can see, I've sought to get more volunteers in. Don's sought to get more volunteers in. I don't know whether or not necessarily the three-full team structure works so much anymore, but I don't know that we need to really even debate restructuring the whole thing. I think Wilson has made some progress on the tools. I think we can keep going that way. I think Don has some good ideas on how to complete the outreach, and certainly I think he can use Ann all the help that he can get on that one in particular. I was going where we really don't have any way forward right at the moment is getting an initial draft of the survey questions themselves up and running. So I was going to suggest that we look through volunteers across the call right now, whether or not they're in Group 1. At this point, I think if people feel that they can do it, we should just seek volunteers to draft some initial questions around each requirement. So if we can get some people to take one or two of these requirements and take a shot at drafting some initial questions, then I think we can get some progress going. At least we have a starting point. What do people think of that?
Michael, this is Steve Metalitz. I think that's probably a good approach at this point, since we don't seem to be making much progress the other way. And I'd be glad to try my hand at a couple of these. I guess if others do the same, then we'll see if everybody's kind of on the same wavelength about how the survey ought to be structured.
Excellent. Okay. And it gives us a point to start working around. We get some of these questions going, we can start reviewing them, and we can start understanding where everyone's perspective is, right, as you said. So I'm going to suggest then, first of all, does anyone else want to comment other than Steve? since anyone object to this? Okay. So I'm going to, I suggest that what I'll do right now is go through these, and this is a little bit describing, I guess, for you, Barry, is go through these and look for volunteers. I'm happy to do a couple of them. I'm hoping Stephen, with his technical background, will pick up some, and others may. There are some that are less technical than others as well. So I guess, sorry, I hear somebody.
Sorry, Michael, it's Susan. Do you want us, and I'm happy to help as well, being part of a working group, we kind of need the questions before we can decide the survey method. So when we hear one of the R, the idea is, should we volunteer at that one thing? We're willing to survey for that question, or should we wait for you to read the whole list first and then say which one we're interested in?
Susan, can you get a little closer to your mic? I can. Your voice is clear, but it's just a little faint. I can't quite make out what you're saying.
Sorry about that. Is that better?
Yeah, that's much better. Okay. Thanks.
What I was saying was, being part of Wilson's group, we kind of need the questions first before we can define the survey, so I'm happy to help where I can. And I'm curious if we should wait while you're reading through the R1 through R11 statements. Should we volunteer for the specific one, or should we wait till you've gone through the whole thing and then volunteer? What method do you prefer?
Well, you know what? Why don't, if people already have any in mind, do you have any in particular, Susan, that you wanted to volunteer for right away?
I'd have to go back and read them again. It's been a little while, so not off the top of my head.
Yeah, that's. I figured that because I was springing this on everyone, so I thought I'd read through them to refresh everybody, and see if it, you know, someone says, you know, that triggers somebody to say, yeah, that one's for me. So I just thought I'd go through. Okay. So excuse my reading skills, but I'll try and read these off. If everyone recalls the document, there's a summation page sort of at the end that this summarizes kind of the requirements, and the requirements run 1 through 11. They're divided in 1 to 11. We don't have a 10, and we have an 8.1, 8.2, 8.3. So let me start with R1, and that section was a functionality was provided publicly accessible and machine parsable list of domain names or IP locations of WHOIS servers operated by ICANN-accredited registrars and GTLD operators and CCTLD operators. That, to me, is, you know, the basic WHOIS service. And that would be on the wire or port accessible or machine accessible service being described there. So there's a whole section earlier in the document on R1. Does anyone want to take the base requirement? Otherwise, I'll start off as first volunteer and do it.
I'm happy to take that on, Michael.
Okay, great. Thanks, Stephen.
All right. That's Stephen Edmond, by the way.
And, okay, so moving on to R2, we have defined a standard query structure that clients can implement and that all GTLD registrars and ICANN registrars will support. This is, remember when we're talking about these requirements, you're not designing these are simply a series of questions in this section, so if you're, it's maybe not as technically involved as one might fear. This is just about standards. So does anyone want to tackle R2? Okay, put me down for R2. Barry? And
Fred.
Who was that?
I'm sorry, Michael. This is Barry. I'm scribing as we go, so I got it.
Okay, perfect. R3, I'd like to see if I can't maybe volunteer Stephen Van Eggman for this one.
Okay.
Steve.
That sounds good.
All right. A set of standardized error messages and standard handling of error conditions on R4 really have to do about asking, translating a series of human meaningful responses to things like, you know, data's missing, you know, your query was no good. It again, it sounds technical off the top, but it's not as technical as it might sound. So does anyone want to tackle that one? Do we have Avery on? I see her icon up. Oh, great! I'm gonna look to you at some point, Avery. So hopefully you can take one or two of these as well. I'll take four. Yep.
Cintra also volunteered for R3 and R4.
Thank you. Great. I was just raising my hand to say that this is Cintra.
Wonderful. So do you want to take four then? And
as
we've
well
got
as,
as well as three. Sure, take three. That would be fantastic.
Thank you very much.
Okay, and moving on to R5, allow users to submit not only domain names as arguments to search functions, but other registration data elements as well. So some of you I know have been really interested, involved in on as to what can be searched on who is and how. So does anyone want to grab that one?
This is Susan. I'll take R5.
Fantastic. Okay. And then, again, my eyes are not what they should be. R5A, I think that is. Adopt a structured data model for Whois data that provides extensibility and changeability properties. Employ a formal data schema language such as XML. So this is a more technical one, and actually a lot of this is under discussion at the ITF now. Thank you, Barry. That's much better. Avery, would you be able to maybe do that one?
It's
6A, actually. I read it as 5A, but it's 6A.
Right, it's 6A. I suppose I could.
Oh, I'd really appreciate that. Thank you.
So overloaded already, why not one more thing?
Well, you know, at least this is in context of stuff that you're paying attention to already.
Yeah.
Okay. 6A and 6B kind of go hand in hand. If it's too much for you to look at 6B as well, Aubrey, I guess maybe
no,
we
I'll
could
look
ask.
At, I'll look at both those, but then won't look at any.
Together? Okay. I appreciate that. That's fantastic.
Michael,
okay.
This is Steve Metallis. Well, you're about to get to the missing R7, and if you look back at the report, the Section 7 is about internationalization.
Yes.
And
would you like to grab that section?
I'm in the IRD working group, so I'd be glad to at least take a crack at it, looking at the issues that that group kind of turned up.
Awesome.
I'll give that a try anyway.
That's fantastic. And how many people on the – just to go sideways for a second, how many people on the call have read Steve's group's draft – I guess it's a draft final report, Steve, at this point?
I think it's a final report now.
It's a final report now. Has everyone had a chance to read that? If not, I suggest for this group it really should be mandatory reading. It's got a lot of good information in it. Okay. Having said that, let's go on to 8.1, authentication framework for Whois. It's able to accommodate anonymous access as well as verification of identities using a range of authentication methods and credential services. I think, you know, there's obviously a little bit more technicality in the authentication methods and the credential side of it, but really I think the question here is, you know, what should this is really getting into the question of Whois accessibility and how that might work or how it might be structured in general terms. So I know, again, a number of you on the call have had an interest in that area. Does anyone want to take this one? I think they should take it hand-in-hand with 8.2 probably. 8.3 could probably stand on its own, but 8.1 and 8.2 should probably go together. Okay. You know what? I can take that one on. I have been thinking about that problem a lot myself for some years. And 8.3, define a framework and baseline set of metrics and accommodate future policy development for auditing of who is. Again, this one's not really actually as technical. I think what this means basically is define the items that we're going to check to see that who is access is what it's promised to be. So it's really about sampling and verification and checking to see that people are in compliance.
Happy to take this one on. I also have a question, though, whether auditing of who is access is referring to auditing of who is accessing the who is, given its placement in the listing here.
We can flip back up to the top of 8.3, Barry, if you can find it in the document, and check that as we speak. But my understanding of it was is to find, key metrics by which people are going to test who is access is what it's promised to be. So what this says here is how directory service applications typically provide auditing functions, methods to monitor, record, report data objects, access activities. So this is really about, some questions about what statistics we expect who is services to maintain, retain, and offer up, I guess, reporting and verification for people that are accessing who is, which would also be used in auditing of all sorts. Is that clear enough, Lindy?
I guess I can continue to...
Basically, you're looking at it and saying, if you were running a who is system and different people were accessing it, what audit trail are you going to save? And what should be in the audit trail?
Sure.
Okay.
Yep. Thank you.
All right. Going back to the main list again, real quickly. R9. Well,
Michael,
there's a. Sorry, Barry. Go ahead.
Can I just reconfirm the assigned owners for dot one, dot two, and dot three? I think. Did you say you were taking dot two, and Wendy has dot three?
Right.
And who was dot one?
Well, I don't think we. I think I was going to take one, but actually, I'm going to since Stephen Van Eggman gave three up, I'm going to ask him if he can work on 8.1.
Okay. All right. Great. Yep. Thank you.
Yeah, this is Stephen Eggman. That's fine with me.
Great. Thank you. There's a recent staff report out on Thick Who Is in regards to existing GTLDs. And I think this is almost a bygone conclusion to some degree, but I guess there's some clarification questions around how this goes forward with a new Who Is platform, and whether or not there is the specific question in the statement whether or not the legacy registry should go ahead. By the time we ask this in the survey, it may be a stale dated issue, and I'm really talking to Liz and Barry about this because I see the staff report that went out. It sounds like it's going to end up becoming its own PDP. Do I have that right?
That's what it looks like at this point, but we're still at the stage where it's a preliminary issue report, and we have a public comment period underway on that, and then we'll be producing a final issue report, and then the council would not vote on a PDP until that occurs, so we're still some weeks away from that.
This might be one to have someone cut their teeth on. Paul, I'm wondering if this is something you might want to try taking on to familiarize yourself with.
That sounds good. Yeah, so I would do that.
Fantastic. And, of course, I know you being somewhat new to this whole thing, feel free any time to talk to me, and I know you have Dawn as a resource who's very experienced as well.
Okay.
And, Michael, would you mind if I go ahead and just assign Dawn as, like, a secondary assignment to R9?
I think that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Right, great.
Thank you.
Okay. And off the short list, we're missing R10, so if we could back up the document.
I think R10 was for a who was service. It's at the bottom of page 30. And I don't know why it just lists as inventory item 4-10 rather than R10.
That's weird. I think
there was a discussion place, but no recommendation.
Okay.
Here, I'll follow up with the author and be sure, but there was no specific inventory item. There was a note about... It was the domain who was service?
Yeah.
As an example, data that could complement existing registration data?
Yeah, it's almost...
Seems to me we should ask that question.
Yeah, I would think so.
I think that would be a good reason to go through the report carefully. Also, what happened with the internationalization, that it wasn't actually a separately identified requirement, but now clearly needs to be.
Right.
Yeah,
so I would
pull it out, I think.
Yeah, Liz, I mean, this will get us started today, but before the next meeting, we'll go through, I'll comb through and I'll ask, maybe Barry can help comb through and
right.
See if we've missed any elements.
Sure.
And if we have, we'll assign them out on the next call. But this will get us going. I'm thinking that we should maybe combine R10 with R9, because, again, it's an interesting greater question about community access to information.
Okay.
Paul, are you familiar with the term who was? What we're referring to there?
You know, just very little, but you know, I don't mind getting into it. This, like you say, it's a good opportunity to dig in and get introduced to some of these topics.
And Dawn will know exactly, as a backup, Dawn will know it quite well. I mean, really, in short, what it means is currently who is information is stateful.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look up a who is entry, it's just about the whoever's holding the registration today.
Yeah.
And a lot of people think that, a lot of stakeholders think that if they had access to who was, an audit trail, if you will,
right,
they'd be able to use that information to solve or combat certain concerns or issues they've raised.
Yep, okay. Get that.
Okay.
Sounds good.
All right. R11. Registrars and registries should provide and publish abuse point of contact information as element of a domain registration record. Several ways this could be supported. For example, registrars could populate the current sponsoring registrar contact information with abuse point of contact rather than a general purpose business contact. Alternatively, an abuse identifier that serves as an index into a publicly accessible table of abuse point contacts could be added to a registration record. There are further examples to demonstrate utility of adopting an extensible data structure and formal schema. I think this entails two questions, really. The first question is, the short one is, should we add another contact type to who is other than four existing now and call it the abuse contact? I largely suspect that registrars would just end up publishing that with the technical contact information. It would be the same information twice, although it could conceivably be another party. So I see why people in the community think it might be useful. I think in practicality, it may not be used in the way it could be, but certainly I think we should ask questions about that and ask questions specifically about whether or not we think people would populate with unique information. The second question that I think is implied by this is, technically, do we encourage or say that there is a construct to add specialized types of contacts in WHOIS services in general? And I would say that in certainly in EPP, which corresponds to the thick registry, WHOIS offerings, there is the ability to define already an extensibility in EPP to define new contacts. And for example, for some of you that might be familiar with the recent XXX launch that was EPP compliant, they did add a fifth contact type, which they use as their membership identifier. So there's already strong case precedent for people to extending those contacts. So this is an interesting one, and it's really about it's a mix of technical and then also usability questions. So who would
Michael, like to take that one?
Michael,
I'm not sure that that's quite what this is about. This is about a registrar point of abuse point of contact, not a registrant abuse point of contact. In other words,
right.
This isn't another field that the registrant would, you know, if the registrant's providing technical contact, that this is not a question of whether they would also provide an abuse contact. This is for the registrar to provide an abuse contact. So, for example, one example of this, there are obviously others, is a way to report false WHOIS data. Should that be part of the WHOIS record? I think that's what this is driving at rather than what the registrant supplies.
Yeah, sorry, Steve, if I wasn't clear. I was assuming that the registrar would have the responsibility for populating that contact, but also that that they wouldn't populate it with anything particularly special. The other question is, does it really also refer to the requirement for the single point of contact that registry operators are supposed to run for abuse issues?
Well, again, I think that might be separate, too, because that's a question of providing that on their site and so forth. This is really as part of the WHOIS response.
Right. So, and then do you agree that on the extension of the contact types and the field information in the contacts in general, that there's already a mechanism to do that?
Well, I think that doesn't that fit in with the data schema and what the different elements will be, kind of some of the R6 questions?
Yeah. And also in the underlying EPP extensibility that already is defined. But I guess the question I would have to the community is, do people think that's adequate or is it missing something? In terms of the underlying EPP extensibility.
And I think the question here in these cases that we will be asking is, do you think this should be a feature, a mandatory feature of the new and better and improved WHOIS system? So it's not now a mandatory feature that the registrar has to, as part of the WHOIS record, response to a WHOIS query, provide an abuse point of contact or a false WHOIS point of contact. So should that be added? Isn't that sort of the question?
Yeah. And I would even trim that back a little, Steve, and say not necessarily mandatory, but should it be mandatory that a WHOIS implementation has that as an optional functionality that can be, right?
Okay.
Okay. Good. So does anyone want to take this one? Steve, do you want to take this one since you have an eye on it?
I'd be glad to give it a try and we'll see if I get it right.
Fantastic. Okay. Let's jump to these additionals under here for a second. And I'm trying to refresh my mind because, in all fairness, I will raise my hand and admit that I wrote these because I did the RYSG responses to this document back then. So I'm trying to refresh my mind what drove these. So I don't know whether or not the first one is going to be much of a continuing issue if effectively thin registries are going to be evolved out of existence. So I think that's probably out of, given the pending PDP and so forth, I'd suggest we don't spend a whole lot of time on that one. And keeping in mind there's no detailed information back in the body of the document backing these. These were just additions that came in during the comment period. Although there was a Liz, Barry, there should have been an accompanying longer document that I wrote that these were plucked from. So maybe we can dig that up and from the comment period and send it around to the team.
It might be in the appendix, too. I'm not sure how it's...
Yeah. Now, what they meant by the middle one, what the registries meant by the middle one at the time, accommodating privacy services, means that that, and again, this was discussed and addressed in a number of recent documents. But basically, the idea of handling privacy services where it's required by law and so forth, and the same principles apply to proxy services, is that the contact information is still populated with real contact information, and that it's being relayed to someone who is appropriate to respond to incoming requests for information. If it's a technical contact, it's relayed to the proper technical person. If it's the registrant, it's relayed to the registrant, both for privacy services and or proxy services. There's kind of a vague line between what defines privacy services versus proxy services. The only way I understand it, and maybe one of you want to shed more light on this, have done work in it, but the only difference I understand between privacy and proxy is that privacy is where it's a lawful requirement for privacy, and proxy is a voluntary measure to mask identity.
Well, it's Liz. I can give you the distinction. Of course, Steve Metalitz is the expert. But a privacy service, the registrant name is the actual registrant, but all the contact information is the information of the privacy service. So the registrant is named in the registration. So if it were my registration, you would have my name as the registrant, Liz Gaster, but then you would have the name of a proxy provider in my contact and the contact information for a proxy provider or privacy provider in my contact information. With a proxy service, if it's registered to me, I am the registrant of record, and you might be licensing it from me. It's going to have my contact information, which is I'm acting as a proxy for you. But I am the registrant of record, and it's got my contact information there, too. But you're the licensee of the registration in that case.
Okay.
Michael, I haven't gone back and looked at the registry stakeholder group comments, but I'm having a little trouble figuring out how this maps to a requirements document. Obviously, there's a lot of issues about privacy and proxy services, and there's a lot of recommendations now that the WHOIS review team has made and others, but maybe since you were the source of this point, you could take on...
Tell you the motivation?
Well,
yeah.
Or take on, you know, the task of kind of fitting it into this to a survey.
Yeah, why don't I take these three? I will volunteer to take these three and see if there's any questions I can carve out of them. I think the middle one's got some possibilities for some questions we could add. And Steve, I'd like to be able to confer with you on that offline because you are quite experienced in this one. But to be honest, where these came from. From a straightforward motivation point of view, I think that the concern for the RYSG at the time was that this would lead to a PDP. This document would lead to a PDP that would result in actions or changes on their side. They want to basically again raise general WHOIS issues that they were worried about if there were to be changes in WHOIS. So that's definitely where the last one came from. Because we only had a couple of members in the RYSG who had a significant interest in dealing with a conversion of a thin to thick WHOIS.
Okay.
Yeah.
Michael, can I suggest, since we're already past the hour, and I know Wilson has a report to make on his work on the...
Yep, that we move on the agenda?
Onto that, yeah.
Yeah, no problem. Just to remind everyone that you should be expecting 90-minute to two-hour calls because we're only doing this every 2 weeks. But, you know, we'll obviously keep as tight as we can to do so. I'm fine with that. So great. We've got these all assigned out. Just before we leave it, Steve, I'd like to ask the group what time schedule do we think we can get initial questions back? I know we're about to go over a holiday season, so I don't know if it's realistic to have these ready for the next call. On Barry, when did you have the next call you were suggesting for the next call?
January 9th, which is still a Monday.
Okay, so we're 3 weeks out. Then I think it's reasonable if we're 3 weeks out to ask people to be prepared with their questions before then. And if we could get the questions out to the list that you've drafted. Barry, if we send them in to you, can you consolidate them into a single document?
Yes, I was going to suggest that. And I'll consolidate into one document and then post out onto the wiki as well.
Okay, so I'm going to suggest to everyone that we have our question submissions in. Barry, if we get them in to you by the end of the 4th, does that give you enough time to consolidate the document and get it out before the meeting?
Yes, that's fine.
Okay. So end of business on the 4th.
And, Michael, this is Steve again, Steve Metalis. Just to make it clear, what we're really trying to draft here are questions to go out to the survey recipients, kind of asking what they think about this requirement, how important it is to them. Do they think it shouldn't be a requirement? Do they think it should? Are there related requirements that they think should be included? Is that kind of the ballpark of what we're looking for? So something that explains
exactly
what these are, and then kind of ask, what do you think about this as
right
a requirement? Okay.
Exactly. And if obviously everyone should review the larger sections on each of these again. And if particularly look out, everyone, please, for gradations. So if, you know, it's hinted at that there's different gradations, and that's an ideal structure for a multiple choice where we'll, you know, the multiple choice answers could be from one extreme to the other of how far you want to take a particular requirement. And that will also hopefully give us a measurement of, you know, within the gray area, which maybe it's not so gray, maybe everybody is leaning one way, or maybe it's fairly even, maybe it really is gray, but at least we've discovered that. Additionally, throughout, if there's anything that strikes you as obvious for prioritization, I think, Steve, in particular to what you were saying is, once we get these questions in, we're going to have to do another, and we've reviewed the questions, and we think that, you know, we've got a valid set of initial questions. We're then going to have to create some prioritization questions around which of these do people feel are, you know, most urgent. I think we want to be careful when we ask most important, because there's sometimes a big distinction between important and urgent. So, but that is probably another conversation when we get there. I don't want to get ahead of ourselves too much here. Okay. Any other questions, issues? Is that time? Anyone object to the timeline I just suggested? Okay. So, hearing no concerns, we'll move on. So, can Barry? Can we move on to Wilson then?
Yes. Just real quick. We're trying to call back out to Wilson so we get a clean line for him. And in the meantime, we'd just like to review our agenda item number 3, and that was the Who Is Access recommendation from the RAP team. And sent out the next draft. There's still one outstanding item within that document, and we're just waiting from compliance to confirm the response in here with respect to the Who Is monitoring system. I suspect at the very least that they'll be okay with what we have listed in the document now, as it's already been posted out from a previous report. Again, we're just awaiting their buy-off. And so I don't want to consume any more time on the call. I think we've already missed our gate to get this back to the GNSO before the end of the year, so we'll look to try to pick this up and be able to send it out prior to our next call on January 9th, and we'll just use the list for any other feedback or anything else that may need to be added to this. But this version is quite different from the previous one, so I ask that everybody take the time to review through it and provide feedback on the list.
Okay, thanks, Barry.
Barry, this is Steve Metalitz. If you could just, when you remind people on the list, if you could just set them a deadline for when you need their comments by in order to get it out in a timely fashion, that would be great.
Great. Thank you, Steve. I'll be sure to do that. And Wilson, are you okay? It looks like he's back online, so Wilson, we'll turn it over to you.
Oh, okay, thank you. Can you hear me this time?
Loud and clear.
Yes.
Oh, okay, thank you. We in the last couple of calls, I'd reported that we had reviewed some tools, but we didn't have the they had some limitations and we couldn't really make up our minds because we didn't have the questions. But I got questions from a previous survey, and I think the questions I got are really broad, as in they are all different kinds of questions they require different responses and all different types of responses. So they really give us a clear picture of what we might need. Depending on the structure of the questions, Google Docs can work for us. But if the questions are complicated, like some of the ones in the questionnaire I sent, then we may need a custom tool. I'm seeing a window opening here. Barry, are you opening the survey?
Yes, I think I've opened up the first one, the Google Docs view, and let me know if people can see that or not.
Okay, but I would suggest if they can also open it on their computers, it may be better. Barry, are you able to open both windows and we compare? Maybe both windows on the same screen?
I don't think I'll be able to do both at the same time, but just let me know when you want to flip back from one to the other, and I'll try that.
Okay, perhaps you may not maximize the screen. But, okay, I'm from a technical background, and I have PHP skills, so I design this one. We can see for... Now, the limitations I'm talking about for the free versions, some of them were highlighted in my email, like the is Google branded and all that. But apart from the branding, for example, question number one. I'm trying to go to question number one on the Google Docs. Oh, sorry, in the custom survey. Question number one in the custom survey tool. You realize that it required two kinds of answers. One in the multiple choice, and another one, the size of the employees. If we have such a question, which requires two responses in the same question, no, I don't think either SurveyMonkey or SurveyGizmo or Google Docs can give us such flexibility. And so I have, for the Google Docs version, you realize that I had to divide it into two questions. You can go to Google Docs. I had to divide it into question number one and then another question just to get a response. Then, the other limitation of the Google Docs, which is also the same with SurveyMonkey, is for the dynamic questions. For example, question number two. Question number two on the custom one. You can decide to, when you click no, it doesn't display the if yes part. And if you click yes, it displays it. We don't have such flexibility. And if when you don't have it and there's kind of there are so many questions like that, it makes the stage very long and may appear boring to the stakeholder, to the participant, to the person filling it in, and all that. But if you have that flexibility, it can be important. Then the other thing is on the reporting for the Google Docs and SurveyMonkey. They are reporting. It becomes their reporting. It just puts all the questions in an Excel sheet. And you have to do a lot of work to distinguish between the different questions, especially when they have parts like A, B, and C and all that. For example, if we go to, for the custom survey or any of them, if we go to page 3, question number 9, page 3, question number 9, it has so many parts which are part of the main question. But for Google Docs, I had to make all those different questions, yet for the custom one, it's just one question with different parts. Those are some of the limitations. All in all, I would go with the custom one if we have complicated questions or questions that are structured in many ways that would require this kind of sophistication or flexibility. But if the questions are straightforward, no or yes, paragraph and all that, then you can go with Google Docs. And for this one, for the custom one, the limitation I pointed out is I would have to develop it myself, and it can take some time, but not more than a month to perfect it and test and all that, which I think is within our limits. Yeah, that is it. Unless anyone has any comments or questions.
Wilson, this is Steve Metalitz. I think this is very useful to have this comparison. And I suspect it means that once we see what people come back with on these questions that we're drafting and that we'll be looking at the next meeting, we may have a better sense of whether it's, you know, whether the questions are as complex as in the survey, you know, the questions you put in as placeholders, or whether they are more simple.
Exactly.
So, and that may help to determine the answer. But until we see those, it's a little hard to say.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we shall have a clearer picture when we come up, when we see the questions and determine how to the number of questions and the structure of the questions. That's when we shall have a clearer picture on which tool to go with. But we definitely have a tool, really. Even another interesting example is question number 5. You can go to question number 5 on the custom one. Page 2. It's on page 2. It requires one to put a rank from 1 to 7. And also, if it's applicable. Those are also kind of like two questions, two answers in the same question, which is not possible with either SurveyMonkey or with the Google Docs. That's it from me for now. But questions and the comments are welcome.
Well, it's Michael speaking. Wilson, first of all, I think this is a fantastic example. I really appreciate you building this up. It looks like quite a flexible tool.
Okay, thank you.
I guess a cross question now to Liz. Is there any problem with using a tool that's, you know, branded Google or something else for ICANN purposes?
No, not at all.
Great.
And Michael, this is Barry. I'll just say, from a reporting standpoint, when we can get all the data back even if it's just raw data that's either comma delimited or if it can be rolled up into a spreadsheet, Once we get access to that data, I'll be able to quickly go in and create pivot tables to make meaning and show trends and different things like that out of that data as well.
That would be fantastic. Wilson, what do you think? Okay, is that going to work?
Yeah, with Google Docs, we can get all the questions in a spreadsheet. But if the questions have parts like 5A, 5B, and if yes, then in a spreadsheet, maybe we would have to do a lot of work to separate them afterwards. But for them they would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 up to 6, 7, 8 like that, not the way we would have ordered them as in 5A, 5B. Although with a custom one we can clearly identify, would have clearly identified them because we are the ones who would have coded it, worked on it. Yeah, but as pointed out at first, we shall have a clearer picture when we have the questions, and then we shall decide on which one to go with and which one is best. Because after that, when we have the questions, we shall even have some sample responses, and then we'll see which one is easier to go with. Yeah, that's it from me.
Does anyone have any other questions for Wilson? Okay, Wilson, thank you very, very much. Appreciate it.
Oh, okay, thank you, Tim.
Really great job.
Thank you, Wilson.
Okay, so Barry, if I'm reading the agenda right, I guess we're on to new business now.
Pretty much, unless we needed any other kind of update from any of the other sub-teams, but I think with our new direction and everything, we've probably concluded that one, so we'll move on to next.
Okay, that, and we don't have any of the other co-chairs on anyways, so. All right. So any new business? Anyone want to add anything? Okay, hearing nothing. Barry, can you take us through our action items for the next meeting?
Okay, I think with respect, there's going to be one carryover from our existing ones, and that's with Liz about the ICANN staff resources and the like, which I think we'll get a feel over the next couple of weeks.
Well, I'm assuming that that's not necessary at this point. Is that right?
Right, yes.
That's
so
correct.
You all don't need more from us if you're going to take this route, right? For the moment.
That was the goal, Liz.
Yeah, okay.
Right. Good, sounds good. That I'll consider that one closed out.
Yeah.
So the rest are really, for me, the first one is to get a doodle sent out for possibly a new time based upon our new schedule. Then I'll also be sending out a recap of the requirements owners for 1 through 11, which is due by January 4th, and I'll give that list out. Just real quick, R1 is for Stephen Van Eggman, R2 is Michael Young, R3 and R4, Sindra Sukmanen, R5, Susan Prosser, R6A and B is for Aubrey Doria, R7 is for Stephen Metallitz, R8.1 is for Stephen Van Eggman and Sindra Sukmanen, R8.2 is for Michael Young and Sindra Sukmanen also signed on, R8.3 is for Wendy Seltzer, R9 is for Paul Bringer and Don Blumenthal, and the same for R10. And did have, I think, Liz, you said you were going to follow up with the author of the report just to understand more details about the who was requirement with Steve. And lastly, R11 is Stephen Metallitz, and then we had the three additionals at the bottom, which Michael Young will take care of. And then the last action item is I'll make sure to send out the registry stakeholder group comments to the requirements report if they aren't included as an appendix to that report. So that's all I have, Michael.
Okay, and I guess just one other item. I think Ann will have to switch over to helping out Don and crew. So just to note that. And she's dropped off the call because she only thought it was an hour. So, okay, great. Any questions for Barry? Any corrections for Barry? Okay, hearing none.
I was just going to say, I think the this is Steve. The registry stakeholder group comments are an annex to the report, starting on page 44. So they're there.
So I mean, the action item I'm going to do with that, Steve, is really just see if they really generate any additional questions or if they're just more, you know, guidance.
Right.
Okay. Okay. Great. And I actually attend the RYSG meetings for a client anyways, so I can ask them. I can work with Don for any additional outreach there, too. Okay. I want to thank everyone for coming to the call, as always. Your effort is most appreciated, and it's all volunteer work, so it's fantastic that everyone's willing to do this. And thank you very much for your time, and I guess we'll wind up the call.